The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Welcome to DSC's Campfires with Larry Wysoon, the unique blend of hunting, conservation, and the outdoor lifestyle, delivered in an entertaining, informative fashion that only a veteran outdoorsman can do. DSC Campfires is brought to you by DSC, Conservation, Education, and Hunter Advocacy. Hornady, accurate, deadly, dependable. Trigicon, brilliant aiming solutions. Ruger, rugged, reliable firearms. Burnham Brothers Game Calls, callingest calls made. Double Nickel Taxidermy, where hunting memories are preserved. Taurus, maker of the Raging Hunter and other fine handguns. Now here's your host, Larry Wysoon.
Welcome to another episode of DSC's Campfires, and tonight we're truly around a campfire somewhere up in the north, kind of central part of Texas, out west of the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and I'm here with Brandon Houston, and we had an absolute fantastic hunt. We talked last week a little bit about some of the management techniques and all those kind of things about this part of the country. Those are behind us now, and let's talk a little bit about the hunting up here. This is one of those areas that's it's a low fence operation, big ranch surrounded by big ranch country.
It's vast. It's very, very game rich. It's loaded with tons of predators. More hogs than you can shake a stick at, unfortunately. And a whitetail herd that is thriving very well. They're very plentiful. And it's been an absolute blast hunting them.
Except, it really has. This
except
has been
for
truly...
this year, which has been the biggest curveball ever.
This is one of those years. I spent a fair amount of time hunting my own property down in Colorado County, which is a substantial way from here. In the times that I've hunted, and I hunted some really good areas, had all kinds of great trail camera photos of at least nice young bucks. There you have to have a 13-inch inside spread and have at least 6 points on one side, or but at least a 13-inch inside spread, and then you can also shoot spikes. But the way it was is I never saw a deer during the legal times that I was hunting. I'd see them driving in before daylight. I'd see them in after dark. But the areas that I was hunting, I've never seen a deer during legal shooting times. Well, so with coming up here, this is one of those, you thankfully invited me, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate being up here to hunt with you. Not only to hunt with you, but to spend time with you and to look at some of the management techniques that you've used through your H3 consulting company in this part of the country. And this, to that said, this has always been one of my favorite areas of the state of Texas in terms of it produces deer as good as South Texas does. And generally, you can see them.
Yeah, there's parts of it we have to work at, but it's not as bad as South Texas. I mean, as you saw and as you see, we have some thick brush.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we have some places that we have to do some thinning.
Right.
To inspire, you know, just to get sunlight down and inspire some growth, but nothing like South Texas. I really, to be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever seen country around these parts that's like that. It's pretty similar around here, but changes from ranch to ranch.
It does, and even within ranch areas.
Yeah.
The ranch that we're on here is close to Breckenridge area. It's next to, close to a river. I think a river pretty much kind of surrounds us, yes, on at least two, maybe on the other side. So it's a totally different habitat from what it is up on top to what you find down the bottom.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then on the sides as,
yes,
well.
Sir. Yes, sir. And that's been the greatest part of this ranch is you drive a mile down the road. Heck, you drive across the fence line up from here to the house, and that ranch looked really beautiful. You're here where we're sitting right now. We're pretty flat. You know,
right.
it's
oh, yeah.
there's not a bunch of changes here.
No.
But it's 70 yards behind the house.
Yes.
It drops 50 foot down, and it's a completely different habitat. Like you said, the King River is right there. And I believe that in the moisture content and water table height has made that completely different. And it's, as you've seen it, it looks different this way. Turn around.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I mean, even where we've been sitting and looking and trying to entice deer to come into us, you look one way, it looks one way. You turn around, look away, the back way, it looks totally different.
Yes, sir.
You go probably 300-400 yards one way or the other, any direction. And it changes again. So,
and I like that. To me, it's the best thing about whitetail. The best thing about consulting is troubleshooting, and I'm a problem solver. And that's what this place is. Really, to be honest with you, this place is a headache. But it's a one rewarding headache because.
But it's rewarding in,
yes,
that,
sir,
fact that you're trying to figure out what's going on. What can I do here? What can I do there?
Yeah.
And it's, but you're dealing with so many different habitats here.
I am, and they respond differently every single year. You know, depends on how much moisture we get, how much moisture we don't get, you know, or how many cattle we graze on this piece of property, or what dozer work we do, what axe work we do.
And
they,
right,
respond differently, and never massive changes. Sometimes little baby steps go a long ways with whitetail, and that's what we've done, and that's what I'm a firm believer in, And I think you're seeing the rewards.
Well, interestingly, the first morning we saw quite a few deer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those situations where we just didn't see the right one. We were looking,
right,
for a particular kind of deer that had an older 10 point, or that you kind of picked out and said, okay, this is one we're going to try to hunt. And our cerebral management,
yes,
bucks. And we never saw any of those the first morning.
And like I said in the beginning, it's been a rough year. I had probably six of the 12 bucks I had targeted for the season, I have not seen, six of those deer I have not seen since between the 15th and the 20th of October. Completely gone. And they were every day guaranteed deer. The others we've successfully taken off. One,
right,
of them, the one you just talked about, I really wanted you to be able to harvest that one.
Which we did, but it took some doing.
It definitely took some doing. And I'm not going to lie, I was really kind of going, I don't know if this is going to happen.
Well, to set the stage, we were hunting a particular blind. There's feeders there, and you'd seen this deer at the feeder. And sometimes the only way that you're going to be able to harvest deer in this country is around a feeder.
Absolutely.
And it may not be that they're coming to the feeder themselves, but they're coming to that feeder to check on does. And I kind of think that's kind of what happened in our situation.
Yeah.
Because we didn't see anything for a long time.
No, I mean, the weatherman kept telling us the wind was going to blow, and it wouldn't blow.
Before we get into the rest of that, let's talk about that a little bit, because there are times in terms of wind velocity, not necessarily direction, but wind, mm-hmm, velocity, that you've been seeing deer, and other times you haven't.
Yes, sir. I mean, I'm a big believer in it. I can show you time and time again. If there is a wind below 5 miles an hour or lower here, you're not going to see deer. And it doesn't matter what the pressure is. It doesn't matter if it's sky high or in the floor low.
Right.
It doesn't matter if you get those rainy overcast days. If there is not a wind over 5 miles an hour, these deer won't move. But, oddly, they will move once the sun, as you saw yesterday morning, as the sun hits the landscape.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, that's when they'll move.
Yeah.
But they won't move before then. We may catch one heading somewhere, like your outskirts, moving through the brush.
It's always individuals. That's the beauty of hunting deer is an individual. And there's some of those deer that are not going to, just like with people, there's some that won't follow a certain pattern, or they won't follow a certain trend, maybe is the case.
Yeah, they're all weird in their own place. But you know, other ranches can be different.
What was interesting about when you mentioned that when we were hunting is the fact that you said deer really don't mow when there's less than hardly any wind. And I hadn't thought about it, but I'd been hunting mule deer out west and north of here, and basically that was the same way, and the whitetail deer are there as well too. But we really didn't see a whole lot. Now the kicker in the deal was is we were able to call those deer, and that made the difference. But here we rattled one morning.
We did.
What did we rattle up? What did I rattle up?
One of the most gorgeous red Angus bulls I've ever seen in my life. And I don't know if he was responding to the horns or if he was responding to Larry Wiser's drunk calls. Because he was mimicking you at every step he took.
He was. It was absolutely fabulous. And that we rattled up a coyote as well, too.
Beautiful coyote.
And came in, and then I thought we actually had a buck coming in, but it was another coyote because it had already crossed the lobe. But that bull, every time, he was just coming in like a whitetail buck would come.
Absolutely. I mean, he was responding right to you.
And he was vocal and all those kind of things. We just kind of kept playing it up. And finally, he stops right across the fence. Thankfully, there was a fence there, because otherwise, he might have come, tried to join us.
He might have run us flat over. You piqued his curiosity, definitely. That was very interesting to see. I bet you I rattled back there 500 times, and that's never happened.
You've never rattled up a bull like that?
No, sir, I have not. No, sir, I can say I have not.
Well, over the years, I've rattled up everything from people to game wardens to deer, coyotes, bobcats, mountain lion, cattle. I was on a place last year, and we hit the horns together, and there were like cows that charged in just like you. I mean, they were drooling. They were doing everything bug-eyed. You know, only problem was they had horns, true horns instead of antlers.
Yep.
And we got them within about 5-6 steps of us. And they charged in just like a white-tailed deer should do in those instances. And of course, this morning, this bull did the same thing kind of thing. But to me, that's one of the fun things with rattling. You never know sure what's going to show up. We've had the coyotes, as we talked about. And in this instance, a big bull to where he probably weighed close to 2,000 pounds. That may be the biggest thing I've rattled in.
Well, I'm glad I could present that for you. He was definitely big.
He was definitely
big. He wanted to know what was going on.
And he did. He responded like you would hope a white-tailed deer would do. So you never know what's going to come in those situations when you're getting rattled. But it's been really interesting. We talked about, I did shoot a deer, and we did shoot a deer that you had targeted for us as well, too. A really nice 10-point, an older age buck that was out of this world as far as I'm concerned. But he didn't come in until really late.
I was really wondering if we were going to get skunked.
I was too.
This year, like I've said, I've had more things happen this year that has never happened. You know, and to sit in a stand and get to that almost not shooting light
right
before you see a deer, I was getting nervous. But he did not read the script. I guess he did not get my memo. That deer has been, I mean, I even told you, you know, I sat down there just to keep tabs on him.
Right.
I sat down there for a week straight and had him. Okay, great. He's a morning buck. He's going to be in there.
Right.
This is going to be great. We can get Larry on him. First rattle out of the box, the pressure will be off. We can spend the rest of the time.
We'll look for dogs. We'll look for
rattling.
We'll play around and all that.
I was looking forward to having the pressure completely off. We can. Well, I know you appreciate habitat, the beauty of habitat.
Oh, absolutely.
We'll go look at that. We'll go rattle. We'll go call some coyotes or something. Oh no. Oh no. What's that saying that you said?
White-tail deer being white-tail deer, they can be the most endearing, they can be the most aggravating, and the most frustrating, pretty much all in the same day. And that's kind of what happened.
Yeah.
Because at very last light, as far as, I mean, we had plenty of legal shooting light. It wasn't that, because here in Texas, the season or the legal shooting times are a half hour after sunset. But of course, we were trying to film this also for a sportsman's life, so we were dealing with camera light situation. And I was to the point to where I'm going, it's probably not going to happen today. And then what happened?
Well, I think if I recall that, I had mumbled to you, I don't know what's going on.
You did.
That was what you said. White-tailed deer being white-tailed deer. White-tailed deer right now.
Exactly.
The first time in my life, I'm not liking it.
I don't like it at all.
Larry, I don't think it was 5 minutes. And I was, you said, there's a dove.
Yeah.
And she came in, and she had her head down. And I'm over there looking at her hawks because I'm like,
yes.
She had her head down. There's got to be a buck behind her.
And you made that comment.
Yeah.
Because when I first saw her, I wasn't sure. She was way back off of the brush. And I wasn't sure it was a deer or a bird to where I just got a, you know, flick of a wing or something like that. And immediately then I could tell it was a doe. And she came in at a dead run. And you're right. Her head was down. And
I knew something was up.
Right.
And so I just, as soon as she got there, I zoned in on those hawks, and it wasn't. I think I said to you, "There's got to be a buck in there." You said, "Yeah," or you may not even have said anything because I think the next words out of your mouth was, "There he is."
There he is. That's exactly what happened.
It was like the world came off my shoulder. I'm like, "Thank you. At least we got to lay eyes on him." So.
But and not only was it a buck, it was a buck we were actually looking for.
Yes, sir.
Just didn't seem to happen that often.
Yes, sir.
The buck comes in, and he's with a doe, and. Again, we filmed it. You filmed it for us for a Sportsman's Life, so people will be able to see it on Carbon TV before too very long, and we'll make sure that people know where that episode happens. The deer comes in, and it comes into the feeder pen, and of course in Texas we can legally bait, and this doe ran into it, and I don't think she was there really to eat. I think she just ran into that was in her path.
I think you're right.
And we got ready, and initially I was going to try to shoot her with a Taurus pistol, but by then it was already fairly late to where I really couldn't see the sights like I wanted to, and the animal too, so I told you, I said, I'm going to switch to the rifle very quickly. I switched to the rifle, and bang.
The love of Texas feeder pens, all going back to the pesky hogs, almost got us there.
It almost got us, because when I shot, it looked like I shot at this deer with a shotgun.
It did.
Because there was dust coming off the ground behind him, in front of him, underneath him. And he jumps out of the pen, and he heads out. We were also trying to harvest a doe, mm-hmm. thankfully. And she goes, because you don't put hardly any pressure on it, she didn't know what was going on. She jumped outside the pen and gave me a good shoulder shot, and I put her down. And thinking that we had hit this deer, which, as it worked out, we actually did, but couldn't quite figure out what was going on with shrapnel going on all over the place. We followed this deer immediately, and thank God we did. But
yes.
He didn't go very far. And apparently I was shooting a 280 Remington 700, of course, top with a Trigicon scope, with a Huron scope, but also shooting 150 grain ELDX Precision Hunter. And I'm really glad I did, because for whatever reason, we shot little shrapnel pieces all over the place, but evidently one of them ended up in the heart and lung area, because that buck actually did not go very far, maybe 75 yards where we found him.
Maybe. But, I mean, I think I told you this earlier. In my time here, that unfortunate situation has happened 6 times, with you being the 6th. All 5 were somebody nicked or hit dead on to that the top of that pen. Was not a harvested animal. It was an animal that ran off and never got touched. So Hornady is doing something incredible, because I can officially stand up and say that even if something is in the way of a Hornady bullet and it fragments, it will still kill
it. It'll still kill a deer. We proved it.
It was an amazing thing to see. Because in the footage, it looks like you shot over the top of his neck.
It looks like I shot over the top of his neck.
Underneath
his chin, and to the left, to the right. I think when I slowed down the footage, I found at least 6 different spots that I hit. And when I shot, it was like there was dust coming up everywhere, and I wasn't quite sure, you know, what the deal was. And, of course, like I said, the doe jumped out, and he said, you want to shoot the doe? Which, absolutely, because the meat on these deer appears fantastic. And absolutely. So I shot the doe, dropped the doe, and we thankfully immediately went and looked for it.
I'm glad we did. We did that.
But thankfully, it didn't go very far. And as you mentioned, and got up there and sheared up. I mean, it is no doubt the buck that you really kind of targeted.
Yes, and I was glad to see him come in there. I couldn't think of a better person to kill that animal.
Well,
than you.
You're very kind, because he's a very special deer as far as I'm concerned.
I'm happy you like him. I'm happy.
Oh, I love
him.
I love
him. It was one of the, to me, what made it better was the whole pen situation, as crazy as it was. It was neat to see that happen.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
it really was. Would I want to do it again? No.
No. Like I said, I've seen five guys out here do it, but it's not ever turned out like that, ever.
Thank goodness.
You and I get to come back shaking hands and celebrate, and you can go home with a lot of good venison and some nice horns.
Absolutely, an absolutely great set of antlers. And the deer in this area have such a pretty cape. This deer had a relatively light forehead, and then the ridge of his nose and the muzzle was really dark. Somewhat similar sometimes to what I've seen up north, although up there generally it's a grayish muzzle and then a really dark kind of russet forehead, but this one's kind of almost blonde side.
Yeah, I don't know if it's. I noticed it when I noticed we weren't getting any rain when we started getting real dry, but I've noticed more color changes in the coats of my whitetail out here than I've ever noticed. I mean, you showed me
some trail camera pictures of some bucks that were truly interesting in terms of pelage, if you will.
Yeah, they look like they're almost like a chameleon. I mean, even your buck.
I mean,
there's splashes of red all over him.
Yeah.
Or that young buck who is almost as red as the dirt out here. But his front quarters are gray, and then at the front of the front quarter, he goes back to red again. But the top of his head, where his preorbital is gray again. He's gorgeous, but I've never seen that out here. If I go back and look at every photo of every whitetail we've harvested off this place.
And that's one of the cool things as far as the trail camera pictures you're getting, but also the harvest pictures that you're getting kind of thing. In the last episode of this, we talked a little bit about TRHP Outdoors.
Yes, sir.
And the products that you use. And, of course, I'm a firm believer in their products, but also in the Scent Guardian, to where I still play the wind. I don't have to. Really, we don't have to. But whatever that product does, it destroys the human odor. And I mean, I spray it on my hat, on my boots, on my gloves, and what you would think would accumulate a fair amount of human odor, and then of course and yet we've never had a deer since we started using this. I know you and I've talked about it as well too. We've never had a deer actually smell us. Now there are times we had a deer come in this afternoon and we went back to look for a management buck. We had a really nice 8-point buck, probably a 4-year-old deer that will turn into an absolute monster in time, but he looked in our direction, but he did not pay any attention to us. He was where we were sitting, is looking something to our left, and we kind of conjectured, well, maybe it was a coyote. And go, well, they see coyotes all the time, bobcats too. And I think we finally came up with the idea. In this instance, he was either looking at a hog, or there was a mock scrape that you'd set up over in that area, and I think he was probably smelling it because the way the wind was blowing from that direction kind of toward him. So,
what I've noticed out here is, because our ground thermal is so thick, these coyotes can hide everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And these deer out here, I've seen the coyotes almost run right up to the feeder pen. And those deer, they just don't run from them.
Yeah.
They'll get a little giddy if a real big hog comes around the feeder pen or a cow. We knew that wasn't the case.
No.
And we had just sprayed the tarsal pasture.
Yeah.
And the only time, even before my time at TRHP, whenever I'd have a nice buck like that come in, and he would start looking around or hone in on something and get real nervous, it was always because there was something mature where I couldn't see it, and it eventually showed itself.
Yeah, right.
So exactly. As we sat there, we know that there was nothing. We could see in the area
right.
He was looking. But what the one thing that was in the area that he was looking is where you and I had treated tarsal
pasture. What he was smelling, yeah.
and he was smelling a buck that he knew was way bigger than he was. He had fought more fights than that little guy had, and he wasn't. He knew I don't think I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah,
I'm in somebody else's kitchen. I better get out. And that's exactly what he did.
I think it's exactly what happened because, I mean, you could tell there were no other deer over there, no cattle, there were no hogs, there were no obviously no cows as well either. But he was really concentrating on that area. Both you could tell with his nose because how he was working his nose. He was watching. Also listening. His ears were forward like
he was
there's got to be something just off to our left to his right. Had his attention and the only thing that was there was that.
I think we could have hung out of that stand and waved at him and he wouldn't have cared.
No, he wouldn't
because
have cared
he was
all.
So
no.
Focused on what was to the left of us.
He was.
And like you said, his ears were pinned forwards. That pure alert. He was, I mean, licking his nose, just
yep.
Working.
And I think that was the fact that he was trying to find out more of what's really going on. In the early one we did, the last week, we talked too about you use mock screen and TRHB outdoors. And the beauty of these are gland based, they're not urine based. I'm not a big fan of urine-based stuff because I can produce the same kind of urine, and I do. I frankly pee in every scrape that I run through, and after just 30 seconds or less, they can't tell anything whether it's human urine or whether it's deer urine, and I think they smell the ammonia and the uric acid kind of thing. But with using the we talked about earlier, and I think it's worthwhile mentioning here again, is that you feel like you're holding bucks on your property by setting up the mock scrapes and using the TRHP outdoor products.
I absolutely know I am. I know it for a fact. And of course, this is I'm still new with TRHP. But it goes to show the help and support that I have with working with TRHP has taught me a tremendous amount. I've always known about plants.
Right.
But when you really start talking to white-tailed deer, start speaking their language, you can't, there's no room for error.
No, there isn't.
But like we talked last week, I pulled in a 48-hour time frame, $6 to come to this ranch in August, working a scrape, something I've never done,
right?
Something that I've never found. And those deer are here to this day, and they're still to this day popping up in front of those cameras on those mock scrapes, and there's new scrapes showing up. There's been more rubs, and we've
looked
at a few.
And they're still rubbing like crazy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
By now they've started really slowing down.
And I like I told you, I just decided one day when we went from the rubs that were for velvet shedding,
right,
to the rubs for territory,
right.
I just every one of them I could find, I'd go up and I'd put a preorbital on it. And it's funny, when you come back the next day or 2 days later, you'd find that rub, and then all you look around, and you know they stand out like sore thumbs.
Oh, yeah.
There's one. This is not a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence.
This brush is so thick that, I mean, good luck finding scrapes here.
Absolutely.
And even rubs. I mean, unless you're lucky enough that sun hits it right, I've got more now that we could drive for less than 30 seconds on these roads, and I could at least show you 15. You saw it yourself.
We looked at it today. We made a little bit of tour of the ranch, and including some of the areas that you normally don't hunt, which once I looked at them, I go, oh, my God, that's one of the most beautiful habitat I've ever seen for this type of habitat in this part of the world. And you can't imagine, even though you're not necessarily seeing them, but you can imagine this almost 200-class type antlered buck standing there looking around one of those big old bull mesquites that are
just
15, 16, 18 inches in diameter kind of thing. And there's no doubt in my mind that if they're not already here with what you're doing, you will be producing those kind of deer.
Well, and like we talked today earlier, there's a lot of this property that could be hunted.
Yeah, it's your sanctuary. It's their sanctuary.
Yeah, and because of the differences in the front section of the ranch and the back with the habitat, as you've seen in the river, I've never seen a piece of property throw me a curveball the way this one does every single year. And guess what? I'm about to go into another curveball because
yes.
I'm going into another winter with no moisture.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be something else. But I that's why I've been very cautious.
And as we've been kind of kicking around a little bit and walking and driving and going to different deer stands, there is a fair amount of green stuff coming up right now. And it's probably because of the water table that we have now based upon the rainfall. But the other thing is this property does – it's grazed by cattle.
Yes, sir.
But it's apparently not overgrazed.
No, sir, not at all. We'll hold more – we'll graze more cattle in the spring.
Yeah.
And like this time of year, I think there's 25 head on it.
And yeah, we just barely seen cattle. And so to me, all that's part of the overall management program. And where I'm going with all this is you do a fair amount of consulting work. Tell me about your consulting company and tell me about how if somebody wants to get in touch with you. And it's not just Texas you work, because we were talking earlier, you were talking about some of the Midwestern states as well. But tell me a little bit about your consulting service and your philosophies, if you will. And then, too, of course, how somebody can get in touch with you.
Well, the website should be done within the next 10 days. I wanted a website that was pretty interactive with people.
Good.
And could give them a grasp of who we are and who I am.
Right.
I first and foremost, I do this because it's what I absolutely love. It's what makes every hair on my body stand up. The clients that I have, you can ask them, when you become my client, your animals are mine.
Right.
And I will lose sleep over your animals.
Right.
But I love to see people achieve goals, and I love to help people. That's what my heart is.
It's very obvious after spending time around you.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I love ranches, and I love farms, and I love the problem solving. I love the curveballs that we get thrown. And each property is different, as you know.
Amen.
I mean, you've been doing this for a long, long time, and you know not one property is the same.
No, and oftentimes within that property, you've got several different types of habitat, several different types of terrain, and to the point even of being several different kinds of deer herds.
Yes, absolutely. And each one of them is different.
Yes, sir.
Just like we're different.
Absolutely.
And so
absolutely.
What I wanted to do was I don't have packages. We don't have, okay, here's package A, B, B, and C.
Right.
I want to meet with you. I want to sit down with you, and I want to talk to you. I want to know, give me the history of the property. Tell me what's going on. How long have you owned it? But also, there's a lot of guys that don't own property, but have long-term leases on property.
Absolutely, yes.
That they want to grow deer.
Right.
But they don't own the property. Well, why can't people worry and help them too? You know, there's a lot of guys I know that have very good relationships with ranchers, and they'll have 10, 20, 30 year contracts or lifetime contracts
yes,
with these
sir.
People. You know, I have a couple clients like that, but you know, they just want to have a lease and grow big deer. But I want to do what you want. I want to build it the way you want it. I'm a big believer in work the habitat first. We've talked about that a lot.
You and I have talked about that a bunch, and that's always been my deal too. Is let's improve the habitat. Let's go with what we have.
Yes.
And in talking about the deer herd, let's see what that deer herd can produce. Because a lot of times over the years, I've seen people go, "Well, we're going to shoot every deer on this property, and we're going to bring out." You know what? They had better deer to start with than what they brought in.
Yeah. And you know, your buddy Luke asked me one time. He said, "What's the very first thing you do?"
Right.
And I told him, I said, the very first thing I do is evaluate water and I evaluate habitat. As much as I want to know all the facts and everything that's going on, what you think, I need to know that, but I put it out of my mind. Because I want to start and look, tell you what my opinion is and what I think that we need to do.
Right. And that's based upon years of experience of trying different things.
Correct. And having good people to mentor. And to this day, people that I can call and talk to. You know, I'm a Texas guy. There's no denying that. And yes, as you said, I have some farms in the Midwest that we work with. A couple of there's two in Indiana, and we're signing a new one on in Minnesota this year. We've got one in Michigan.
Cool.
And that's a total different habitat.
Oh, it is. Yes,
it's a total different herd. Everything is different. And so, you know, having contacts up there, having resources in that part of the country, fellow biologists and ecologists that we can work with, even nutritionists for that type of range. You know, up there, it's predominantly the fields.
Yep.
You know, they're not putting 1,000-pound protein feeders out.
No,
you know, they're not.
No.
They don't have the chicories, and they don't have all the stuff that we have here. So we have to work with it differently up there. And I like to use to build relationships with people who can partner with me and go to those and help those people. I've got a great guy, two or three guys in the Midwest that will be hands-on with my Midwestern clients.
Fantastic. Good.
Because I'm a believer in that. It's about building relationships with people, and that's what this was for. I want to be able to see people achieve their goals, number one, even no matter what it is with their wildlife and their habitat. And I want to see people smile, because not everybody cares about the hunting side of it. I've got a client that we work their herd because, like he tells me, his wife, all she wants is when she drives that property, she just wants to see big, healthy deer.
She's a big, healthy
what she
deer.
Says.
Yeah.
Just make sure my deer are big and make sure they're healthy, and I'll always be happy. Hey, you got it.
Absolutely.
You've got it.
What a great situation to deal with.
Yeah. And so it's probably more personal than any, but most people. I'm a personal person. I want to get to know you.
Again, right.
To me, it's about relationships. It's about, I want them to trust me, and I want to trust them. And to be frank, I don't take on everybody. Some people are not willing to listen. You know,
some people, they're too much into the immediacy. You know, I want to have the biggest possible ever, but I want it next year.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. There are times where you have to bring in genetics.
Sure. There can be times like that.
But I think you have to give it your all before you make that decision.
Let's see if we may have the best possible there is.
Yeah.
But you never know until you start improving the habitat and giving those deer a chance to get some age on them and a few other type of things. But you're exactly right.
And, you know, high fence or low fence, it doesn't matter.
No.
I'm not one who frowns upon bringing in genetics, and I'm not one who frowns upon a high fence. I think it all can be done the right way. But in certain situations, I do not like, we're going to buy a high fence, and we're not even going to look at anything. We're just going to go start buying stalker deer. I'm not the guy for you.
No. That's the way I always was.
To me, you know, you got to put forth an effort. I'm not looking to build fast food deer. I'm looking for the people who are building it for the long haul, for the people who truly, genuinely care about what's there. I mean, whether you're in Texas or Oklahoma or Minnesota, you know, let's grow them.
Absolutely.
Let's make them healthier than they've ever been. And Mother Nature is going to provide that for you. We just may have to help her a little bit. But then also, you know, bridging that gap in those harsh times, like right now.
Yeah.
You know, having that gap of good nutrition and good supplemental feed is when they need it. But always the habitat. Always.
Always comes down to habitat. It really does. That, to me, has always been the key. And the beauty of it is when you start improving the habitat for white-tailed deer, you improve it for songbirds, you improve it for all the other little critters that are there, and more importantly, so very often, or all the time, if you do that, you improve the habitat and you improve the vegetation. And that's bottom line. It starts at the soil, goes to the vegetation. That's where it begins with.
Well, I tell my clients all the time, when we do habitat work on your ranch, we're not just helping your deer.
No. You're helping butterflies, songbirds.
Everything.
They benefit generally a whole lot more than what the white-tailed deer do in those situations.
And it's art. To me, it's art. It's a love.
I'm glad you bring up the art, the fact that it is an art. It is an art of production. And to me, an art is taking various regimens from various scientific fields and being able to combine them in the right combination. That's where the art comes in. And when you do that, things happen, and happen in a good way.
Yeah, and those of us out there that see it that way, it's almost like these ranches are clay. And we're molding them.
That's a good description.
We're molding them.
Absolutely. That's a great description.
You know, like we talked today when we were up on top of the ridge and looking down. I said, you know, if you look at this country and you love habitat, then you can see the beauty within it. But when you look at it and you think about the management and the sculpt, when you get to brush sculpting and all that stuff.
Right.
It's just like trimming a beard. It's just like trimming a beard to me. It's, you can make it beautiful, or you can totally just go, oh no, just cut it off. But I'm a firm believer in habitat is start simple.
That's where it starts. You're right.
It takes years for that stuff to come back if you go too far.
Yeah.
And so for those people out there who are, I highly recommend you consult somebody before you make some drastic changes, because remember, little things are big to deer.
Little things are big to deer, and little things expand over a period of time to where it can have either a great effect in a positive manner, or it can have a great effect in a negative manner.
And I always tell people, you can impact them, or you can defect them. Affect them.
Again, a good way to describe it. Exactly.
So, and we want to impact them. And give them a benefit. We don't want to affect the deer. We don't want to affect the non-native species that you have. We don't want to affect the anything. You know, we are there to advance the habitat, advance the wildlife. And it's really not done by big strides, to be honest.
No, it's little things that you do. You're exactly right.
Well, like in South Texas, though, you know, that's different. You know, you may have to take a bulldozer and go right through the center of certain things and strip it and thin it out, but... You know, that's, but even those strides, really, in all actuality, especially those guys that have been around for years in South Texas that are just, you know, in my opinion, pioneers, you know, but even as great as that looks, and it's big, and it's like, wow, you just change everything, those really still are small, because with everything in South Texas, there's a lot of moving parts besides just a dozer knocking trees down.
Absolutely.
So it's really, in that aspect, it's small, too.
It is. It is. Brandon, it's been so much fun spending time with you. I felt like being here, we've been friends for years.
Yes, sir.
And I look forward to many more conversations here as far as the podcast is concerned, but also in some other ways. If somebody's interested in getting in touch with you, what's the best way to do so?
The best way to do is to give me a call. My number is 214-399-7201.
Do you mind repeating that one more time?
It's 214-399-7201, or you can email me at growem, growem, at h3whitetailsolutions.com. The website will be h3whitetailsolutions.com, and like I said, there's a page. If you go to that right now, it has the email, it has a phone number.
Perfect.
It's a landing page, and it'll be live with the live portal. I'm hoping within the next, right before Christmas, is what I was we're shooting for.
Good.
Right now.
Okay, well, this will come out after Christmas probably, so by the time this airs, you will have a website up, and they'll be able to get that a whole lot easier than even before. So.
And I tell people all the time, even if you're not ready to pull the trigger and hire a consultant, don't ever be afraid to pick up the phone and call me. Because the one thing you can always do to make me happy is call me and let's talk habitat and let's talk whitetail. I'll probably talk more than I should and give you more things than I should, especially if I'm trying to retain you as a client, but I don't care. You know, I like to talk about it. So, you know what? You don't have to want to hire me to call me. Just give me a call and let's talk. Shoot me a message on Instagram, you know, and shoot me an email. I love this, and I love to help people, and so you'll always get my full attention.
I love it. I know that you're involved as a member of DSC and Texas Wildlife Association as well, too, which are two absolutely great organizations.
Fantastic organizations.
Hopefully there'll be an opportunity, if you happen to be at the DSC convention this year, January 6th through the 9th, they'll have an opportunity to visit with you. And if not, they'll have the website that they can go to.
Yep. They're, in my opinion, two of the greatest conservationist organizations on the face of the planet.
I tend to agree with you.
Yeah, I bet. TWA is fantastic, too. DSC is fantastic, and it's an honor to support them.
I agree.
And as things evolve and grow, I will continue that contribution without fail. Even Larry Wiseman aside, it's what they stand for, what they represent, and what they're doing is everything that we as hunters and conservationists need, period.
I totally, totally agree. I want to thank you so much for joining me, or allow me to join you this evening, sitting around a real campfire up here around Breckenridge, Texas. And I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed spending time with you out in the field and the hunting that we've done. And look forward to doing a little bit more. We'll be back a little bit later, maybe on, and get my old buddy Luke Clayton and Jeff Rice out here and Gary Robertson and see if we can't call a predator and maybe shoot a hog.
Oh, it'll really be fun then.
I agree.
Especially with that group.
Oh, that group especially. Ladies and gentlemen, thank y'all so much for joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you right back here around the DSC campfire next week.
Thanks for joining us around the campfire. To leave a comment or suggestion for an upcoming episode, go to Instagram at Larry Wysoon Outdoors. Please join me right here next week for another DSC's Campfires.
DSC Campfires with Larry Wysoon has also been brought to you by the Texas Wildlife Association, working for tomorrow's wildlife today, TRHP Outdoors, Kennetrek Boots for the trails less traveled, Boyt, the finest in hunting gear, Pyramid Air for all things air gun, and Ripcord, rescue travel protection.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV. Pursuing wild game in wild places. Tune in to Hunt Stand Presents Saturdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.